Welcome, welcome to the best 5-minute podcast with Forrest Kelly.
If you want to become a master sommelier, remember, only 5% pass the exam. Let's meet one of those 5%ers.
The best 5-minute wine podcast.
Hello, Ian Cobble, master sommelier. You might know me from the movie Somme, and I've also a business called The Cobblest, what I consider to be the best quality wines in the world.
The web address is?
The Cobblest. So my last name is spelled U-B-L-E-I-S-T. Has to do everything with the wine I've learned in the last 25 years. I spent a lot of time traveling in Europe, all over the world, discovering great producers. And, you know, since the movie Somme, welcome to hundreds of sellers all over the world, and people open up great wines, locations, and I have a chance to share that with the world through The Cobblest. Stay in touch with my travels. We offer small production wines that are usually organic and biodynamically farmed that are kind of, you know, drinking the special art pieces of the world versus the mass production.
What is the, just off the top of your head, a ballpark figure, what is the ratio of American meeting that category that you just said, or as opposed to, you know, France and Italy and Europe?
You know, there's some America. I think a lot of the great values are coming from Oregon, and there's some great stuff from the coast of California, the 20 to 40 range that are great. But for me, most of the great wines of the world come from the classic area. I'm talking, you know, Spain, France, Italy, Greece, Germany. You know, the tariffs have been a slight challenge recently, but, you know, a lot of the importers I'm working with, you know, some of the distributors from the countries and the areas are offering discounts to keep them in a good sweet spot. But in general, I'd say about 60% of the wines that I sell on the Cobblest are from Europe, because I do love the classics, but there are a lot of California, Oregon, Washington, and a few other small pockets around the country that do make wines in a class expression without, you know, too much makeup, too much oak, too much sweetness.
You graduated from what university in 2003?
I was in Sonoma State University. Yeah, so I grew up in Huntington Beach, Southern California, went to Sonoma State University. I wanted to be a doctor, and then it was just, the sciences were just, didn't really appeal to me. Quickly turned to Spanish study and international wine business. So I spent about 5 years at Sonoma State Wine and Language. And then I had a job offer for $2 an hour in Portugal, worked for the oldest port house in Portugal, an hour up the Douro River. And ate and drank. And, you know, they would pass around these paint thinner containers full of like local red wine. And we would drink that with local bean stews and work 15 hours a day for that, you know, time was about $39 US, and I would have done it for free, but I had this incredible experience. And then I had some money saved teaching, you know, traveled around North Africa, Europe, and India for about a year and a half, and got back, you know, completely broke, and borrowed some money suit from my dad. And I walked into the wine merchant of Beverly Hills and got a job selling some of the great wines in the world, and the rest is history.
You know, not to paint it with a broad stroke that doctors don't take jobs that are $2 an hour. I think you made the right choice.
You know, I have a lot of doctors as clients and lawyers, and yeah, a lot of them want my job. They're, you know, I think, yeah, but you know, we need people that are help us with our lives, and I provide them with a nice glass of wine at the end.
Well, was there a moment when you decided to go, you know, lean into the wine thing? Because, you know, when everybody starts college, you really don't know what you want to do with the rest of your life, and you got to pick a major. And, you know, was there a time when you said,
there was. So I was at Sonoma State University, about to go there. My sisters were going there. I think I was 17 or 18 at the time. Of course, shouldn't have been drinking wine, but I remember going with my dad and one of his friends to lunch, and we went to this place in the Russian River Valley, and we had a glass of Sauvignon Blanc from, what was it? It was Frog's Leap Sauvignon Blanc from Rutherford, Napa Valley, goat cheese and some fresh basil on this local, beautiful, like dark purple tomato, right? With a little bit of sea salt. And I had a little bit of this Humboldt Fog goat cheese, if I remember correctly, a little bit of the basil, and this tomato and this glass and this little taste, and like something just struck my soul. It was just like, this is amazing. Like, I mean, I grew up in Southern California with that Tex-Mex, you know, your hard shell, you know, ground beef taco with sour cream. like there's nothing wrong with my mom's tuna casserole that she, you know, brought from Illinois. But, you know, we all lived this American melting pot of a childhood, I think. And in Orange County, it was great. I mean, I surfed a lot, all that, had this incredible, you know, childhood, but that whole high end of that effect on my palate hadn't really been struck. That cordon hadn't been struck on my palate yet. So that bite was just like, wow, like there's so much pleasure to be had in these intricate flavors and flowers and wines. And so that was at 17. I kind of woke up and I was like, started to watch Food Network, and I went to Sonoma State University, played tennis, and I was always hungry because I was working out 4 hours a day. And I would just come home and I'd go to Oliver's Market and pick up whatever I could afford, and started teaching tennis so I could afford more stuff. And I ended up just, you know, eating and drinking every dollar I had, and started drinking like Klein's and Zinfandel and Klein Old Vine Mourvèdre, because that's all I could afford. And then I started drinking other things. And I really just, it was right when I was about 20, 21, started hanging out with a lot of friends that had families that were winemakers, and, you know, brothers that worked at wineries. And so we'd sit around the fire at their houses up in Glen Ellen and Sonoma Mountain and, you know, pop these bottles on some really great Napa Cabernets. And I started just opening my mind up to these great flavor experiences. And, you know, Napa Cabernet is just the beginning of it. And all these flavors are so approachable for a young palate, where there's these beautiful oak flavors and these nuances of boysenberries and blackberries and a lot of these fruit forward characteristics of different Pinot Noirs from Russian River Valley, for example. And it's a great place for people to start. You can buy a bottle of good Rioja for $10 and a pile of Jamón Ibérico for $6. And all of a sudden you're sitting in some hostel somewhere, really appreciating your parents and the fact you were born.
The best 5 minute wine podcast. Looking back at it too, you know, your savant capabilities came out at 17. What you know now about wine, and at 17, you know, basically zero, and that you realize that, wow, this stuff that I'm drinking and what's happening in my palate is not by accident. I got to go down this rabbit hole and see where this leads.
You know, we're born with this incredible palate, right? We can taste so many flavors, and we have this incredible taste memory. And I think that's one thing that I have been able to do, and I think it's been a real gift in my life, is taste a lot of really beautiful flavors. And it's a part of my life that matters the most. I mean, it's, you know, all of our senses, right? Getting a great massage, listening to great music, tasting a great bite of aged ribeye, for example, you know, going to that Greek restaurant and having a bite of, you know, feta cheese with lamb. I mean, with the perfect glass of white wine from Santorini, these are all, our palate is like an instrument and it can be played by different flavors. And I think that my life has been just kind of chasing these experiences, because the world is so vast, and there's so many pockets of the world I still haven't been to, but I've been to many of the major pockets, you know, all of the classic European countries. I think now that I grow older, I want to go to more Eastern Bloc countries. I just went to Croatia, went to Bosnia Herzegovina last year. I just actually got back off a plane from Seoul, South Korea last week, and I was in Japan and Taiwan and Hong Kong. Like, and these flavors and these dumplings and these noodles and these stocks, like, I swear to God, are it's so amazing to be able to experience these flavors. And, you know, so wine is just the beginning. Obviously, wine is my profession, it's my passion, but food is kind of the centerpiece of it all.
You're just one of 274 people in the world. So what do you think, how did you make it? How did you become a master or somm?
You know, it's you got to be a little bit crazy and a little bit talented and have a good taste memory and a good memory in general. So you really have to love fermented beverages and to start. You have to love wine. You have to love food. You have to love people. You have to love culture. You have to love history. And you have to be a little bit maniacal to want to learn everything. And so I think that's it's not that many people. I mean, most people are fine taking the level one exam and you're like, okay, I passed the intro exam. That's 90% pass. And then a lot of those people want to take the certified. The certified is around, depends, 30 to 50% pass rate. Used to be a little bit higher. And then of those people, there's an advanced exam that has closer to 15 or 20% pass rate, even as low as 8 or 10% sometimes. So some tests, 1 out of 10 people pass. And then of those people that pass that test, people get a taste of it and you want to go to take the master exam. And the master exam has about a 3% pass. So all of those people that made the advanced exam, which is, you know, I think there's less than 1,500 people or 2,000 people in the world who have passed the advanced, if I remember correctly. It's somewhere close to that. And now it's growing every year because the movie Somm really excited a lot of a population to get into wine. But, you know, the master exam, there's around 3 to 7 people in the world that pass every year. There's 3 parts of the exam. there's the knowledge portion. They sit you down for about an hour and they ask you questions about water, spirits, any sort of, region, sub-districts, grape varieties, producers, what wines they make, anything around the world of beverage. They ask you about an hour of questions. You have to get 75% of them correct. The next part of the test is a tasting exam. The tasting exam is six wines. You have to describe the color, the reflection of light, viscosity, concentration, the fruits, flowers, herbs, earth, wood, non-fruits, oak influence, alcohol levels. And then you have to talk about the acid, alcohol, complexity, tannin length. And based on that, you're like, this is from this country, from this region, from this grape, from this vintage. And you have to get 75% of the points correct to pass. Usually you have to get 5 out of 6 correct to pass the test. And then the final portion is the service portion. And you basically walk into a room. All of the patrons are some of the world's top master sommeliers, and they're all playing different guests, right? And some of them are the maitre d'. They're like, here's a guest. He ordered the 1982 Cheval Blanc. Could you please go to the table and tell him about that? And then you do that. And they're like, well, the next table has a bottle of, let's say 1987 Dom Perignon. And you have to know that 87 Dom Perignon wasn't made, right? And so you have to go, tell them, I'm so sorry, sir. And you have to basically play this part. And then you'll go to another table and they'll be like, I think, did you serve me rum? And all of a sudden there's a blind tasting of different spirits that you have to go to another table and, smell these glasses and not taste them and make sure that they got the right spirit, for example. I'm not giving you the exact what they're doing these days,
right?
Because that's all kind of private, but it's, they're similar kind of tasks. And so you have to be a master communicator, master of people. You have to be a great taster. You have to have the knowledge of the world and you have to be able to communicate that to people. And I think that's one of the hardest parts of it all, because you can know the world, but to be able to share it and talk to people and make people feel comfortable, that's the art of being a great sommelier, is communicating all of this information to your that's in your brain and not making people feel like, your job is to make people elevate their experience. Your job is to show up to the table and to help them spend money wisely on a great bottle of wine, pair it well with food, and to enliven their life and to elevate their experience. That's really what the goal of a great sommelier is. And the goal of the whole exam is to enrich that culture. It's to, motivate people to learn the world of wine and to then to go share that experience with people to keep that alive, because I think it's such an art to share food and wine with people that don't know it, and to be able to say, hey, here's this incredible bottle of wine. I know you only have $55 to spend tonight, but I'm going to find you something special and you're going to leave here with a smile on your face.
So when you're out and about doing all of your things, whether it's having dinner with your wife at a nice restaurant or wherever, when you get ready to bring that glass of wine up to your mouth, do you feel everybody's eyes watching you to see your reaction on your face?
No, it depends on where I am. I mean, if I'm in a group of people and I'm blind tasting, and or if I'm doing an event, which I do a lot of events, private events for the YPO and different sort of big legal firm, they invite 100 of their clients and I put on a show and talk about the world. But not really anymore. I mean, I think it's calmed down since the movie, but I don't really feel like I'm on the spot. Like I might, if I'm at like a famous restaurant in Europe or something like that, and the sommelier staff might recognize me or something, and I might feel like, there's eyes on me, just because people have never seen me in person before, and they know my intense character from the movie, and they're kind of just, like, wow, he's here, after watching me in film and seeing my whole life, unravel, and come back together on the screen. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but it's intense, and I fail in the middle, and the end is me passing the exam. But yeah, it's been an interesting, experience, traveling the world and I'll be in like customs line in, Hanoi, Vietnam, and somebody's like, are you that Ian guy from that movie I saw on the plane 2 days ago? I'm like, yeah. They're like, I can't believe I'm standing next to you. And, I've been stopped in the streets of Austria and Mexico. And, a lot of people have seen it, millions and millions. And it's interesting that experience of, just like trying to pass this really hard exam. And somebody's like, hey, can we just kind of interview you and follow you a little bit? And next thing people are stopping in the street 10 years later. It's an interesting life experience. That's all I'll say.
So you don't have to have a poker face. You can, when you're tasting, you could just show all the expressions you want and then verbalize them.
Yeah. I mean, if I don't like something, I mean, it depends. If somebody made the wine, like, and somebody put their life's work into making a wine, I'm not going to be a jerk, and I'm going to respect them and, you know, have a glass, even if I don't like it. I mean, you know, oh, what do you think? Oh, it's nice. You know, I would just be polite. And, you know, it's just like if you went to somebody's house and they gave you a, you know, made chicken for you for dinner and it didn't taste that great, you're still going to eat it as long as it's cooked. Right. And you're going to be like, oh, how do you like the tuna on the chicken breast with the Velveeta sauce? You're like, okay, this, it's nice.
Yeah, Velveeta sauce. Way to keep it real and not call it cheese.
No offense. Well, it's technically not cheese, but offense to people that like Velveeta. It's just a joke.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, those are not cheese slices. They're milk products. But anyway.
So yes.
Tell us about the website. The formation of it, obviously, this seems like a natural transition from everything you've done before. Beforehand into
yes now. Yes, so we launched exactly yeah we launched about in early November, so you know people can go to the cobblist.com. It sounds like cobble list, but it's actually cobblist, IST, and you can go to the website and sign up for our daily emails for free. We have a pretty robust online store as well, and we're launching some clubs in Q1 of 2026. But the premise is basically you sign up for this email, and every day about 10 a.m we send an email with about 500 words about a particular bottle the wine, the history, the people, you know, why I think it's special, how I found it, the food and wine pairing. We have a link to an actual recipe with everything and the type of glass where you should drink it with. And we have, you know, about the best price of the country that you'll be able to find it, considering that we do pay for shipping. If you buy under $200 worth of the wine, it's a $20 flat shipping. For example, if you buy a $20 bottle, it costs me more than $20 to ship it. So we charge $20 flat shipping. If you spend over $200, it's free shipping. And it just seems to balance that way. That way we stay in business because shipping is so expensive. You know, shipping a six pack will cost somewhere between $25 and $55 a bottle, depending on where you're shipping it around the country. Yeah. So the Cobblist is a daily email offer company that we're launching other, you know, avenues, like a monthly club. We're going to do a $125 four pack every month with a different theme. So people can look for that in the coming month or so. It'll should be live on the website. And then we have, private client division. So we're, you know, if you need anything, you can email info@thecobblist.com and request what you're looking for. If you want, you know, a cellar to be made to fill in your house, wherever you are in the country, we can fly in and buy the wines and put it together for you. If you want to do any events, we have an events division. So I can fly in and put on a show and do a blind tasting education for anybody who wants to learn about wine for their household or a small group of their clients. I've done events up to actually 150 is my max a couple years ago, but since we do around 30 to 80 people. Sometimes I'll call people that I know great wine and make great wine, and I will ask them, do you have any wine available? And they'll be like, no, or they say yes. And I taste with them, take a photograph of it, write it up, and we send an email. Or some people will call and say, hey, can I come taste with you? And they might bring, you know, a case or two of wine and pour it for me. And I usually pick about one out of every 10 wines I taste. You know, at the end of the day, it's a tough market. And you know, the reason why people trust me is because I kiss the frogs so you don't have to. You know, I taste 9 wines and I might like 5 out of the 10, but there's 1 out of 10 that really makes sense in terms of price and quality and lineage. And there's 100,000 wines that you can buy in the American market. You know, you're going to find a 300 or 400 a year from me that are worth considering. And they're going to make you happy because they've been scrutinized and gone through my filter, which is arguably one of the more difficult to get past because I'm very particular and just want the wine to really make somebody feel like they made a good bet with their money. If you spent $35 on a bottle of wine, it should bring you a lot of pleasure because that, you know, it's a lot of money to spend on something. You should go to thecobblist.com to drink better, to elevate your wine life, and to know that you're making a good bet with your money. You're not going to have to kiss any frogs because we already did it. And, you know, if you want to spend smart with your money and you want to drink great wines, there's no better place.
Because, you know, the new generations are not drinking alcohol specifically, but wine sales are just dropping. So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think a lot of the premium price points just need to be corrected. I think over the last 15 to 20 years, the price points in a lot of these wines have gotten really high. And I think that it just doesn't make sense for the current economy. I think in between much people are making and how much money premium wine costs. It's tough to be able to afford to buy a $40 or $50 bottle of wine for some people, let alone a $250 to $500 bottle. So I think there's going to be a price correction. It's just, I think, economics at the end of the day. And I think people, you know, are obviously focused on maybe being a little bit healthier. But at the end of the day, I think it's a lot easier to make a cocktail in terms of, you know, you can make a cocktail at home for $2 versus spending $5 to $6 on a good glass of wine. But I think when people start to learn about wine and learn about the pleasure and the history and all of these special areas and these grape varieties that are planted deep into these old, you know, places of the world that have been 250 million years of geological history. And then you plant this grape that spent 100 years digging deep into the soil, and each plant makes one bottle worth of grapes. You know, these are incredible stories. And there's, I think when people really open up the experience of life and really start to look at the potential of pleasure through taste, wine is irreplaceable. There's something, I think, mentally stimulating about it, the history and the people and the stories behind it, but and also with the taste and the taste experience, and you can take a small sip of wine and this kaleidoscope of information can come through a glass of wine, and it tells a story. I mean, that's the interesting thing about blind tasting, is you can take a smell and a taste of a wine, and it tells you sometimes exactly in the world where it came from, you know. And that's pretty incredible to be able to put your nose in a glass and taste something, and there's enough information that you can actually pinpoint on a map where it comes from.
What's one wine fact you know that almost nobody believes until you prove it?
Okay, I'll tell you. What's one wine fact that nobody believes until I prove it? That it's illegal to water the vines in France.
There you go. Especially because, you know, it's legal. Irrigation is legal here in the United States.
Yeah, and a lot of people in Napa will tell you that you can't make wine in Napa without irrigation, but that's false as well. So there's a lot of great dry farmed vineyards in Napa, particularly Frog's Leap and Dominus. But there are certain areas of the mountains that, like, the vineyards are on rock, right? It's very difficult to grow grapes because there's no groundwater. But in general, in Italy, it's illegal to water vines. And in France, it's illegal to water vines, where if you actually took a hose out to your vineyard and you got caught, you would lose your ability to call that wine that appellation that year. So if you were making Bordeaux from St. Julien, for example, and it was a really hot vintage, and you saw your grapes struggling, and you brought a hose out into the vineyard, they would make you call that Vin de France.
That's funny. I'm just picturing the inspector asleep, you know, leaning up against the wall asleep, and then suddenly, you know, 100 miles away, he hears a hose move, and he's on it.
Totally. It's really interesting. I mean, in France, there's almost 500 AOCs. They're called Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, or Protégée now. And each one of these 480 some odd appellations, there's rules on the grape you can grow, how many vines per hectare, so how many vines per 10,000 meters, and the amount of juice you can squeeze off of that, and the aging requirements, etc. So, you know, they're very serious about their wine, very serious about their cheese, and that's a reason why when you buy a bottle of wine, it means something, and there's a kind of an AOC on there, and it basically tells you that this person followed the rules of this area to call it this, and you were expecting a certain level of quality. Similar is happening with Italy. Within DOC and DOCG, there's different, you know, quality metrics. There's different quality metrics within the VDP within Germany to produce different wines, Riesling in particular, Pinot Noir, et cetera. So if you know and you pick up a bottle and it says certain things, you know that there's a maximum yield, there's a certain type of farming approach, there's winemaking, it has to be a specific way. There's a lot of rules within each appellation. America doesn't really have that. So if you make wine in Napa, you can pretty much make any wine you want, however you want it. You just have to make sure you accurately tell people the alcohol and put a certain general warning on the back. But That's one thing I love about Europe, is they're very particular about their products. And if you buy a piece type of cheese like Parmigiano Reggiano, it's coming from a particular place, from particular cows, aged in the right way. And you know you're getting, if you buy Parmigiano Reggiano, you know you're getting a specific product, and it's protected, and people will prosecute anybody who makes Parmesan outside of that area is going to go to jail for basically counterfeiting something.
Wish they'd do that with olive oil.
Yeah. People try to counterfeit wine too. You know, people will take a bottle. bottle of Bordeaux and put wine from Spain in it, and you know, people and sell it in a given country in Asia, and you know, and people are drinking Spanish wine that they think is Bordeaux, for example. But you know, counterfeiting happens all over the world every year. Honey is a big deal. You know, olive oil is a big deal. You know, wine from North Africa will be bottled as Italian olive oil, as you know, and it's still good. I mean, Tunisia makes some of the best olive oil in the world, but it's not Italian. You know, nobody wants to buy Tunisian olive oil that doesn't know it. People want Italian olive oil. So yeah, it's an interesting world out there, but that's why knowing your source and where to buy it, and having a trusted vendor and a trusted professional, that's why people trust me, is because they know that I'm buying from the source. And, okay, you know, if you're buying olive oil and you want to get some great stuff, you have to make sure your vendor is vetted.
Okay, this one is your right hand is on the sommelier Bible. Have you ever, out of habit, picked up a glass of water and started swirling it?
I have. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, who hasn't? Yeah, I mean, yeah, anytime I'll have a glass, but usually when I'm drinking water out of a wine glass and I'm just like, start swirling it, I'm like, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing with my life? You know, and you know, but it is what it is. I mean, you know, but I do like water out of a wine glass. I think if you have really good water, like good water, water is a big deal. I mean, you pour water out of the tap in California, a lot of it smells like chlorine, but if you have really good water, this can really be amazing. I mean, I was just up in, where was I? I was up in the mountains of Japan and the water was so good. I was at a place called the Takaragawa Onsen, one of the most famous spas in the world. Takaragawa Onsen, if you actually look it up, it's beautiful. It's like you're in these 110 degree waters soaking along the river in the mountains outside between Niigata where the Olympics were in 98, I believe, 98 or 96. And it was like close to Nagano, I believe. And the water there would just tasted like it had just melted off of a glacier. And it was like, so, you know, there's something like water sommeliers exist. There's, you know, thousands of different waters that are bottled around the world. And some of them are really good. One of my favorites is a Mexican one called Agua de Piedra. That comes from Mexico. Sparkling water, super mineral. Yeah, there's one in Barcelona. I'm forgetting the name. Vichy Catalan. That's right. Vichy Catalan, VichyCatalan. Trader Joe's is actually selling it now. It's about $4 for a liter sparkling. And it's so good. You just have that right out of the refrigerator. And it's, you know, water becomes very entertaining when it gets very good. I mean, because it all has different minerals and textures and bubbles. And, you know, water out of the faucet isn't so great. But
what's the strangest or most unexpected place you've ever opened a great bottle of wine?
Strangest or most unexpected place? Unexpected place. I would say like in a dinghy off of an island off the north of Sicily. You know, you're just, you know, bumping around. You can barely even, you know, sit in the boat. You're almost getting thrown off and you have to like sit down and barely pour your friend some sparkling, or actually not sparkling, some Malvasia from Salina, Salina. It's actually one of the wines we have in our store. Caravaggio, he's like the caper king of Salina, which is a movie called El Postino, which was filmed there. We just took this small dinghy on a trip around the island, and he became pretty precarious very quickly with 5-foot waves, and I had my new daughter and we're trying to drink some wines, and you know, and you're like, oh, let's just bring a bottle of wine out there, and next thing you know, you spill half of it, you know, and you know, half of it's on my daughter's clothes, which I'm holding, and you know, you're just getting pounded around in the middle of the ocean as you look at Stromboli, which is a erupting volcano out in the distance, and you know, life experiences. But you know, I don't know if I could think of any more strange place to open a bottle of wine.
If someone made an action figure, Ian Cobble, Master Sommelier, what accessory would it come with?
Oh man, I think I would probably be wearing board, you know, like board shorts, like surfing board shorts and flip flops. And then I would have like a Quicksilver short sleeve t-shirt on, a hat with sunglasses on my head, and I would have a nice glass in my hand of Burgundy.
I could see that. I could picture that on the comic book cover.
Yeah. So, you know, as you know, all business in the glass, but all, you know, I grew up on the beach and, you know, I love the beach. Anybody who know me, I just want to retire on the beach of Kauai and 3-day But, you know, the salt water is just so great. And, you know, but it's cold right now in Napa. So I'm not wearing flip-flops, but I do wear Birkenstocks and flip-flops a lot of the year. And even when it's cold and people are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm a little confused, but it is what it is.
How would you rate yourself on a scale of stuffy and uptight on, you know, the wine sommelier parts where everybody thinks that to Canada wine in a hotel bathroom sink?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm very, you know, I can be a little bit particular. I think you probably hear like I really love great wines, and I don't like, you know, BS made wines with sugar and lots of oak. But at the same time, you know, I'll drink wine out of a Dixie cup in a Motel 6, and then you know, off the side of the 5 freeway if I need to. But I'm probably like a 3. Okay. Or 3 or 4 on a 10 scale of that stuffiness. I try to, you know, growing up on the beach, you know, I grew up, you know, very relaxed. I grew up going to a lot of reggae festivals. I love reggae. I love that whole culture. You know, I just love just people feeling comfortable around me as well. And, you know, if you're kind of too stuffy, people don't feel comfortable. So I've always gone out of my way in this business to just try to make people who don't know much about wine around me feel comfortable as well. I think that's important. And, you know, if I need a decanter, I'll, you know, rinse out an old, you know, old container I found under somebody's sink and just make sure it's not contaminated. But anything can be a decanter, and I'll drink wine out of anything. And, you know, I'll frankly drink any wine. I just don't really enjoy drinking oaky sweet wine. But I can find a bottle for $8 at your local supermarket that's decent, you know, local Chianti or something. But, you know, and wine doesn't have to be expensive to be good. And especially when you get to Europe. I mean, if you, you know, in America, because of the import costs, but if you get to Europe and you go to a French supermarket like a Carrefour, you can find stuff for $5 a bottle. That's, you know your buddy's driving up the road, and you can serve that in a paper cup, you know, and you're happy.
I figured you weren't too stuffy, because on your website, you know, you've got a picture of you on the beach with your wife and your children, and then you're on a camel.
Oh, is that camel photo up there? Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. I was on the beaches of Morocco during that travel in Europe. When I was 23, I ended up in a beach called Essaouira, where Jonas Joplin and Jimi Hendrix got together, and they, you know, he made, you know, Castle in the Sand and Purple Haze and all that stuff, and they spent a summer there. But I lived in that town for a month, and I, when I went back about 20 years later, I visited some wineries up the hill, and went back to that same beach where I was, you know, broke in 22, and went back and was riding camels with the local, you know, white wine, drinking it out of the bottle. If you can see that photo of the camel, I'm drinking out of the bottle on the camel on the beaches of Essaouira. So,
okay, last two questions here. What is there a wine trend that you secretly love and your other sommelier friends may tease you about it?
A trend? Not necessarily. I mean, I don't really think there's many trends out there right now, to be honest. I mean, I don't mind a little bit of ice and rosé, for example. That doesn't bother me if I'm in a park, you know, and my rosé is getting warm and there's no way to cool it down. I'll add a couple ice cubes. Or to my white wine, I'd rather have a slightly diluted cool glass of wine than a warm glass of wine. Yeah, other than that, I can't think of any trends. I mean, I don't know. Trend is, I mean, I just don't know. I say Pet Nat. I'm not a huge fan of Pet Nat, which is, you know, kind of the same fermentation in the bottle all the way through. And it's just, I don't really like drinking Pet Nat very much. Petit Naturel, which is what it means.
Last one, what's a fun fact? Do you have a fun fact about your palate or your tasting process that kind of surprises and amazes people?
No, I mean, I can't think of anything that's really that interesting. let's think. Fun fact.
Because in tying in with the last question, I was at a party and they were serving sushi with Spam on a stick, on a like a shish kebab with sushi.
Yeah.
And a Spam. And it's like, what is going on?
You know, I'd eat it. You know, I mean, Spam musubi, you know, you have rice and you have Spam. Spam's just a little bit of sugar and salt and pork, right? As long as I think it's seared off, it'll be fine. But yeah, I'm trying to think of a fun fact.
because you kind of you can use your tasting prowess as a kind of a superpower, right?
Yeah, you know, I think I have a good taste memory. I think that's one of the unique things about me. I don't think I really have any like fun facts, but I do have a good taste memory where if you give me a glass of wine, I'll be like, oh, it tastes like this wine I had 15 months ago at this place. And they're like, oh, it's the same wine, right? That's like a weird fun fact about me is I have this interesting taste memory. And I have a very, I think, sensitive taste, which is why I'm so particular with wines that I love. And not everyone's going to agree with me, but that's the best part about the world. You know, we all, you know, like different art and different music, and that makes us different.
At the end of the day, though, you can say I'm the expert. You're not.
Yeah, I'm right and you're wrong. Exactly.
Okay.
All right. So, you can stay in touch with me at thecaubalist.com. So thecaubalist. Quickly hit subscribe to stay in touch. And you can follow me at Ian Cauble, IanCauble on Instagram. And anything you need, you can reach out info@thecaubalist.com. And we're here for anything you need.
Thank you very much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me, and call me anytime.